Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast. Today, I'm so excited to have a conversation with Dr. Debbie Smers. We've known each other since our initial year at the Naturopathic College. So I think it's been almost 13 years now, Deb, which is hard to believe. Oh my gosh, I remember we were in the same stall, or not in the same stall, in the bathroom installed at, at the college, not the same stall. And we were chatting about what we were going to do for the weekend. And we're like, oh, we're going to our cottages. And then we found out our cottage was on the same road, on the same lake in Muskoka. We
found on the same side of the road, everything. That's right. And then we both lived in Markham.
That's right. So we had such a like similar upbringing, and we traveled before starting the naturopathic college. So we instantly hit it off and became friends. And I've been fascinated to watch Dr. Debbie go through her naturopathic career, and she's constantly getting tons of training around the world. So I'll introduce her and we'll get into the topic of today, which is heart rate variability and anxiety in children, because right now we know stress levels are super high during a pandemic, during stay-at-home orders. So this is going to be a really great episode to address, or a topic to address today. But I'll introduce you, Dr. Debbie. So Dr. Debbie is a certified naturopathic doctor, hypnotherapist, rugby coach, and fitness instructor. She studied meditation and Buddhism philosophy at the Suan Mok Monastery in Thailand. I won't say the city. German biological medicine she studied in Germany, and holds annual mind-body retreats with her mentor and mother, Wendy Shi. She is an avid lecturer and motivational speaker. She created Neuro Health and Fitness, a brain training center for kids, as well as she is the co-founder and director of Naturopathic Living, a large multidisciplinary clinic in Markham, Ontario, where she lives with her husband, two children, and her dog. Her daughter was diagnosed with PANDAS in 2016. We'll talk about that later. And she has experience then with mental health from both sides of the couch. So welcome, Dr. Debbie. So glad
you could join us. Thank you so much, Lisa. I'm thrilled to be here.
yeah, we're really happy to have you. I know there is a lot of anxiety right now, right? So what are you seeing in practice in terms of anxiety in kids and how it's manifesting? Because they can't always tell us, you know, I'm anxious, or tell us what's emotionally going on. What are you seeing?
Right now, I'm seeing a lot of parents calling in to inquire to find out more what they can do. But I find that it's an interesting time right now, because earlier, when there was the is school going to start, isn't it? Or when the kids were still in school and they were waiting, there was a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear in the children. And then when they were losing their summer programs, their sports, there was almost a grief that the kids were experiencing. So they'd already gone through so many emotions and so many feelings that I feel like right now we're actually in a bit of a pause, because we're in a waiting game. And I feel like what is going to come out of the COVID pandemic is going to be a mental health pandemic, because the what is anxiety like? Anxiety likes control. Anxiety likes reassurance. And we as adults, as well as children, have lost that ability to have control. And so once things start up again, or supposed to start up again, we're going to go back through that another phase of uncertainty, grief if it's programs that the children are losing, and fear of what's going to happen school-wise.
Mm-hmm. No, that's, yeah, I think that's going to be a huge epidemic, right? Unfortunately, coming out of this. Mm-hmm. And I think so it's important to kind of check in with our kids, really pay attention to their health. Like, are there some markers or signs that kids may be suffering from anxiety? Like I've heard, you know, oh, I have a stomach ache. If they have a lot of, you know, unexplained stomach pain, that can be a sign of anxiety. What are other common signs?
A common one is headaches. And again, we're not seeing it as much right now because the kids don't have anywhere to go. So they're in a bit of a safe bubble. But when they're going to go back to school, we're going to see headaches is a huge one. Stomach aches is a big one. And the kids don't even realize that they have anxiety. I mean, even adults don't realize. I had a patient come to see me just the other day, and they said that they went to the hospital because they thought they were having a heart attack. And it was the second time it happened, and the doctor said it was anxiety. But they're sure it's not, because there's no way they have anxiety. Mm-hmm. And it was anxiety, and we finally managed to pinpoint that. But it's hard to know. It's hard to diagnose, because some anxiety is a good thing. So to understand when it's actually affecting you in a negative way, when you need to seek treatment for it, is difficult for adults. So how on earth can we expect our kids to figure it out? One of the things I'm seeing a lot with younger kids, Lisa, so children in the daycares, is a lot more separation anxiety. Mm-hmm. So they're just not leaving their parents' side because they haven't had to for the last 4 months. So I think we're really going to see a lot more anxiety coming through at a younger age, as they now have to go back to, the parents have to go back to work, the children have to go back to school, and that a separation anxiety is going to be huge.
Definitely. We saw that with Stuart because he started preschool last week. So we were with him, you know, every day for 4 months, and drop off was a nightmare. You know, he's starting to adjust. I think he's happy with the other kids now, but he was really clingy and didn't want to go in. So I can only imagine after a few more months, right, when kids have to go back in September and they're home even longer, how challenging that's going to be. So I think this is, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say also how we're parenting them, like the way they say that 10% of anxiety in children is parenting. It plays a big role. And unfortunately, adults are fearful right now. And so it's hard not to parent from a place of fear. And it's hard to get our children to be as physically active as they were previously, especially if you were relying on organized sports, which is a huge piece of it as well. And if they have an anxious disposition, or if their parents are anxious. So another big thing for children who have anxiety is to look at how the parents are parenting them and parenting style. If the parents, especially the mother, has anxiety, that child is 7 times more likely to have anxiety. Wow. And it's not simply a genetic thing. A lot of it is epigenetics, which we can talk about if we decide to go there today, or perhaps that's a whole nother conversation. But even just in nature, that we all have something called mirror neurons in our brain. Do you ever know if you're watching a TV show and that person looks like they're throwing up, you almost want to throw up as well? You're feeling right that way. You're mirroring. So that's actually something called a mirror neuron in the brain. And children are watching that. So they're learning how to react based on how their parents are reacting. They did a study with young children, and they had the mother. So these are very young children, so less than one. And they had the mothers reacting in different ways to different people. And so they would have a man with a beard come in, and the mother would act, you know, uncomfortable with that person. And then sure enough, the child would mirror that feeling. And so it's quite amazing how much these children are picking up. And let's face it, we're all in a place of fear now. But if you have anxiety in your own right, you can't help but show that to your children. And so these kids are picking it up even more.
Right. It's a lot to think about and process, right? Because we're obviously feeling it. We're trying not to show it all the time or keep it behind closed doors, but it's bound to come out. So that makes things a lot trickier. So that I hadn't heard of those mirror neurons. That's so cool. Thanks for sharing that. And then it'll make us more conscious of dealing with the anxiety, you know, when they're not around, or having those, you know, self-care tools and other times of the day.
I actually have a resource I can share with you if there's a place to share it, called Parenting the Anxious Child. Okay. And it's just some do's and don'ts for parents. Because when you think of anxiety like a fire, and it wants to be fed. The problem is when you feed a fire, it gets bigger. And typically what children want is control, avoidance, and reassurance. And because it seems momentarily like it makes the kids feel better to give them those things, we give it. Unfortunately, we fed the fire. So we give them control. We say, oh, you're scared to go to camp, or you're scared to go to that sleepover. No problem. I'll drive you there and pick you up at 11:30 and at night and drop you back off at 6 so no one will know. And we make all these accommodations that don't help them overcome their anxiety. So we give them complete control. we give them reassurance constantly, and just kids are the ones that are like, what's going to happen next? And then, and we constantly reassure them because yes, it makes them feel better momentarily, but not long-term.
Mm-hmm. Oh, fascinating. Yeah. So those are tools that, yeah, we can commonly utilize as parents, but it's not serving or helping them in this resource. So this gives you tips on how to navigate those situations. Oh, that's great. So we'll definitely link to that in the show notes. Yeah. Thank you for sharing. And then in terms of, kids and anxiety. So we talked about some physical symptoms. I think you're a big proponent of HRV, right? Which is the main topic for today, heart rate variability. So can we use that as a way to track or see if our kids are more susceptible to anxiety? Is that a tool we can use?
Yeah, we can. HRV or heart rate variability is a very interesting tool. I think that we're going to start seeing it more and more. Well, actually, it's now in Apple Watches and different devices. And it's fascinating because it can be used as both an assessment as well as a therapy. So if you've ever, well, obviously you, Lisa, have heard of this, but for
right, your I wouldn't say I'm an expert, but I'm learning. I'm learning as I go. Yes.
No, but I was going to talk about the sympathetic nervous system. So the autonomic nervous system, or the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. I'll just quickly paraphrase for your listeners in case they don't know or forget. That's that fight or flight response, that something terrible has happened. You're running from the bear. Of course, when you're running from the bear, you want all of your resources to go to your hands and your legs and your brain to figure out how to solve the situation. But then afterwards, you need to be able to switch gears and go into relaxation, because that's the only way we can digest our food, sleep properly, relax, and heal. And so what is health? Health is when we can have that balance. So we need to be able to run from the bear. We need to be able to digest our food and go to sleep. And how do we measure that? So all we can say, well, how stressed are you? Because when you're stressed, you get stuck in the running from the bear phase, or what's called the sympathetic system. But, you know, people have a hard time even understanding their own emotions, even as adults. And so what the heart rate variability does is it uses a complex array of algorithms, and it looks at how your autonomic nervous system is functioning. So it really takes into affect your sleep, your diet, your exercise, your rest, your mental health, and it can give you a score. And you can look at that score. And different companies use different measurement tools. So I don't know if I'm allowed to say company names or
sure.
not. I'm not endorsing anybody. I'm just telling you different ones. So HeartMath, they use it as a treatment. So it's not so much about assessing, but they have this beautiful app that children can really help with. So it's biofeedback. So you'll connect this HeartMath is to your ear, to your earlobe, and then you do HeartMath breathing, and they get you into what they call coherence. So Lisa, have you ever had a day where all of a sudden everything just seemed to go right? You were so on, you got so much done. It was amazing. You just were boom, boom, boom. You were on.
Yeah, you're
so
in the flow.
So they call that coherence. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they're not trying to get you in a meditative state. They're trying to make all of the factors line up so that you're in coherence. You're just on, you're getting things done.
Right.
And so they have a very complex algorithm, as I said, and you use the app to be able to determine how well you're doing getting into coherence. And they have little games you can play. So you're literally just breathing with this device connected to your ear. And some of them you can play the game where you'll make the forest start to come alive, or you'll make a rainbow, and it'll be based on how well you're doing. So that's a way you can get kids to get into the state, activating their parasympathetic nervous system without just saying, oh, if you're getting stressed, breathe. Because isn't that the most irritating thing? When somebody says just
totally.
To take a deep breath.
Yeah, totally.
You can actually see how you're doing.
Yeah, I have the HeartMath one. Yeah, I have the HeartMath one. Yeah, so it's like that little clip on your ear. And then at the very simplest, I've heard heart rate variability described as the variation between heartbeats. Like there can be micro or millisecond differences between each heartbeat. Is that fair to say too at its most simple level? I guess there's a lot of parameters being measured, but...
Right, there's a lot of parameters being measured. As a matter of fact, another company, Elite HRV, actually is doing research to show how we might possibly be able to diagnose COVID-19 through your HRV or even just if you're well or if you're not well. So there's a lot of things that are being used for it. But yeah, so they're actually looking at, so not the heartbeat, but the space between the heartbeats. And there should be a little bit of variation between these. So you actually don't want it to be the exact same. You want this variation. And so they're measuring that. They're measuring the whole thing. Like if you want to get technical, they actually need the entire heart waveform. To the more accurate HRV devices will want the entire heart waveform, and there's many parameters throughout it that they use to get a more accurate reading, which is always one of the problems because some people are saying they have HRV and it's not as accurate. But that being said, it's still helpful.
Right.
So then there's someone like the Oura Ring where you wear that at night and they give you your morning readiness score. And I've even had some patients, adults, start to use that to determine whether or not their protocols are working for them, they think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard that used too, where you track your heart rate first thing in the morning for 5-10 minutes. And you could see maybe the night before, if you had some wine or you didn't sleep so well, you're going to have that low heart rate variability, which was, you know, hard for me to wrap my brain around because we want a low heart rate, but to have a low heart rate variability is bad. A low heart rate can be good. A high heart rate variability is good. As you said, you want to have some differences between the heartbeats and other parameters because that measures your like resilience to adapt to stress and go back and forth between the parasympathetic.
Okay, and the reason they're having you do it for a couple of days is because you're comparing it to yourself. So yes, they'll compare to other people your age so you get a sense. But especially in, well, some of them like Elite HRV, they use it before exercise. They often cater to elite athletes. And so what's the best day for you to do that really hard workout that you're going to get the most out of it? And so you can use HRV for exercise performance as well. They encourage people to do it before and after meals as well. So you can see how your body's reacting to what you're doing.
And they have like a chest strap for that one. Is that right?
That one's a finger.
A finger. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. But it's very interesting because as we get into biohacking ourselves more and more, I think HRV is going to play a bigger and bigger role. And so for kids, I think it's more of not an assessment tool, but a treatment. I don't think we're going to be able to use it. I don't use it in order to see if children are stressed. I use it for children as a way to teach them to activate their parasympathetic system, to be able to sleep better, digest, relax, focus, playing those little games we talked about.
Yeah, that's amazing because with the heart math. So on the app, they have like at the very basic, it's like this rainbow circle that, you know, you breathe in as it expands and then as it contracts, you exhale. And I still have to check out the games for kids. So it's a way for them to like focus on their breathing, right? And get into, I guess what they call like heart-centered breathing or, you know, count like kind of prolonging their exhalation to get into that parasympathetic zone. Is that correct?
Right. They actually have a couple of different types of breathing in heart math, depending on what you're trying to evoke. So they have heart center breathing. They have like the heart math breathing. So it depends where the person's at as well. If you're looking at somebody who's more trauma state or somebody who's more anxious or depressed, you might go with different methods.
Right. Okay. Very cool. Yeah. Who knew there was so many different types of breath? Like we know in yoga and meditation there are, but then even for the heart rate variability, you can use different ones based on your starting point.
And then have the personal one. The one that you have, I think, is the personal one.
That's right.
You connect it to your phone. So they also have a practitioner one that has a few more games.
I'll have to check that out. Thanks for the tip. And then how young would you, like what age is a good age to start using this for kids to use it as like a treatment to help calm them down or get them into a good zone?
As long as they're able to focus for a little while and they can follow instructions, you could start at that age. So 4 or 5, maybe you could even go as young as that.
Right. Okay, great. Yeah, if they're able to just, focus, follow the games, follow the breathing patterns, then it's going to be beneficial. And then in terms of like, you know, frequency, like how many times in a day or a week and for how long, I guess it's different for each kid, but is there kind of like, you know, it has should be at least 5 minutes a day?
I'm so sorry I interrupted.
No worries. No, yeah, just to how, like what's a good frequency and amount of time to practice to start?
So the reason you're doing this treatment, it's important to realize you're not doing it for the moment. So you're doing it so that when the moment comes, in other words, something causes you to feel anxious or stressed, you can get into this state. But we're trying to do it to actually train your body. So you're old enough, I think, to be able to remember records, yes, and how you actually have a groove in the record. And the whole idea is the needle goes into that groove and it stays in that groove. And so when we start having negative thoughts, as soon as, the more often we have them, the easier it is to go into negative thinking. And that's because we create a groove in our brain that something bad's happening, boom, I go into this negative self-talk. And so what we're doing with any of these devices, we are trying to create a new groove that we can automatically go into, that instead of being a negative, is a positive.
I love that
and
analogy.
And so the more often we practice, the faster we're going to go into that groove. So it's really important to realize that, yeah, you're doing it because you want to get there quickly. So I'm doing it right now. I'm not stressed. Sometimes if you're using like a heart math practitioner, somebody, we might even try to get them into a state of stress and then get them out of it. But that is because then if you're having a panic attack on the driveway, or you're going into a panic because somebody in the playground is making you feel insecure, you can get back into that groove quickly. So the more often you do it, the better. But even 5 minutes a day would help.
Amazing. I love that analogy, because we do have those patterns that we just automatically fall into. But this is like, wait a minute, let me step back, let me take a different path. So you have control over that, which is so powerful.
Interestingly, the way I actually learned about HRV was I was reading a book on weight loss, and the person who wrote it is also a personal trainer and done many other things, but he would make his clients do HRV breathing with the feedback device for 5 minutes before every meal.
Interesting.
Because again, you get into the zone, you start doing things, you start doing things with mindfulness when you're in that place.
Great.
And you're going to digest your food better, because now you've gone into the parasympathetic zone. So you're going to digest better, you can absorb better.
Amazing. And then you're mindful eating, you're not going to overeat or, you know, stress eat. So I love that. That's another good way to use it. So thanks for that tip. And then it's also being looked at. So you mentioned, for like athletic performance. So if your heart rate variability is high certain days, that might be the day where you do your harder workouts. We've talked about it in anxiety in kids. I've heard a bit about in relation to cardiovascular disease and even mortality. So is there other health outcomes that, you know, working on is supporting your heart rate variability can help prevent?
They say that it can decrease diabetes, depression, metabolic syndrome. So, I mean, we know how many diseases have a stress focus, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's huge. How many diseases have an inflammation process focus? So if we can decrease that and understand what we're doing, I think that we're going to find more and more we can help people, especially in the stressful world we live in.
Definitely. Yeah. So no, I think that's so powerful, because stress is a major contributor for so many chronic conditions. And, you know, stress has just been being added onto our plate day in and day out. So we need to, you know, change the situation and change our perception to it as well. And this sounds
That's the huge piece, because we take pride in our stress, don't we? Like when people say, oh, you're a super mom, the first thing I'll say is, no, I'm not. And I don't want to be that way. I don't want to think that the more I do, the more I'm going to be praised by my peers. Right. I do what I do because I want to do it. And I hope that I don't feel stressed around it. Mm-hmm. But most people feel like, oh, my life's so stressful, let me tell you all about it. And the more they take on, it's almost like with a badge of honor. We bear our stress with a badge of honor, which doesn't do us any good physically or mentally.
I totally agree. Yeah, even just like, and people that don't sleep enough, that can be a badge of honor as well. But I think during this time, you know, the great pause, the great realization, whatever you want to call it, has given us time to really step back and focus on what is important and not, you know, wear all these different hats and juggle all these different activities and find out, you know what, life can be enjoyable when we're not striving to be, you know, the best at everything or getting our kids involved in every single thing out there. So if there is a silver lining to all of this, you know, I think that is a big one for sure. And then Deb, so in terms of the different devices, so you said, yeah, there's the ear clip, the ring, the chest strap, the finger clip. So what do you
there's
find?
A patch is the, you can the wear.
Oh, there's a patch. Oh, wow. Okay.
A patch, yeah.
What do you find is like the easiest or the most like the one that people are most compliant with, or does it matter?
That's a good question. And it really depends what they're doing it for. So again, I find I'll do it a lot for treatment. And so that, you know, HeartMath is definitely in my mind the leader for that. But I also have the Elite HRV, and I like that one for, you can do, cause that one's more of an assessment. What's my morning readiness? What's happening here? You can take it throughout the day just to see how you're changing. You can take it after a stressful event and see how much that seemed to affect you. Okay. Whereas the Oura Ring is just there to give you that morning readiness.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's say, you start off your day, you check your HRV, let's say it's low, the heart rate variability. So then like what tools do you use and how does that make you approach your day differently?
Well, you can think of all the things that we've learned as naturopaths. So you can look at how you slept the night before and start to appraise, why did I not sleep as well? Is that what the issue is? Have I been drinking my water, doing my exercise, relaxing, meditating? Is there something else that's going on that I didn't even realize? Sometimes we are stressed and we don't even know it. So it gives you the chance to take that pause. Because again, we wear our stress like a badge of honor. Oh, there's so much in my life, but I'm fine. And so it gives us that bit of chance just to say, maybe I'm not.
Right. Yeah. So it sounds like, yeah, you get those results, you analyze, okay, why was it off and what can I do to improve upon that today and tonight to hopefully have, you know, a more favorable reading the next morning.
But also then it goes to your treatment protocol, right? So maybe we need to support your adrenal glands, because when we think about the whole adrenal, pituitary, thyroid axis, is there something going along those lines as well? Hormones are going to play a role.
Mm-hmm. It's really complicated. So it lets you look at it from different angles and then work on those. So it sounds like a really useful tool. And I think I definitely want to explore and learn more. I'm curious to talk a little bit about your experience with anxiety in your kid, if you're comfortable talking about that. So you've been on both sides of it as a naturopathic doctor and then as a mom as well. Do you mind sharing a bit about that?
So it's one of my favorite topics, Lisa. So I think that mental health, as we call it, is such a more complex issue than it's being treated as. Mental health has really gone into the world of psychology. And there's usually so many underlying causes to what that issue is, and they're being ignored. We are just saying, take this antidepressant, take this anti-anxiety, and go see a therapist. And that's not going to get us to the root cause of what's happening. I would say more often than not, there's some other root cause that's causing your child to have anxiety. I had no idea about pandas when my daughter got it. So literally what happened was she was a normal child, went to school every day, had friends. And then she got a little bit sick on one day. I let her stay home from school. The next day I said, I think you're fine. And she literally lost her mind. Her teacher described it best that, so this was fast forward 2 weeks. I'm trying to make Samantha go to school. So we go early because the teacher and I had the strategy. All right, of course, anxiety. What do you have to do for anxiety? Of course, you have to face a situation. You have to get accustomed to it. So, you know, we would go to school early. We're sitting waiting for the school to start. And the teacher said she watched Samantha as the bell rang. And she turned from a little girl into a wild animal and fled the room. And that's exactly what pandas does. It steals your mind. It trigger causes. And you turn literally into a wild animal. So if I were to say to you, Lisa, you know, what are you most afraid of? Like lions, tigers, snakes, tarantulas. And I said to you, you know, behind that door, I have, you know, 3 snakes, 5 tarantulas, a lion and a tiger. And I started dragging you to the door. What would you do to get away?
Mm-hmm. You'd kick and scream and
you'd turn attack into me. A you'd absolutely yeah. attack me. And that's what pandas kids do. They attack. Like my daughter attacked therapists. She attacked doctors. She attacked principal. She attacked me. And the thing is, like, I hope your listeners are listening and thinking, wow, like, I've seen my kids suddenly started to do that. They say that there's one child in every kindergarten class that probably has PANDAS. And no, they don't have anxiety. They have an infection. They have an infection that's caused an immunological reaction that has mimicked issues that have gone to the brain. And now these kids look like they have, you know, my daughter was diagnosed on the 95th percentile of anxiety, the 95th percentile of dysregulation. And of course I knew, because I was lucky, she was in grade 6. And so I was old enough to know, like, no, she doesn't have this. Whereas if it was in grade 1, I probably would have said, okay, I guess this is my reality. This is what my daughter has. And I would have learned to live with it. And we would have just said, yes, I have a child with anxiety and this is how it goes. But I said, no, she doesn't. And I looked and I looked and I looked. And finally, I had gone to a conference about PANDAS, or I'd gone to a conference about autism a year beforehand, and they talked about PANDAS. And I said, you know, I don't want to focus on infection. I'm not going to listen to this part. And so I didn't listen properly. How ironic is that?
Oh, geez. Well, at least right? The seed was planted, right? Can you explain?
The seed was planted.
Yeah.
So I was able to go back to the old notes from that course. And I kept fighting. I had to fight the hospitals, the doctors. But eventually, I was able to get her on antibiotics. And within 7 days, my child, let me put this in perspective. We cleared out her school, locker, everything.
Oh, my gosh.
We thought she would never attend school again. Her trigger was children. So she couldn't talk to her friends. One of her friends, she saw them somewhere and she ran. Even so, she's in grade 6. Even kindergartners, she would run from. So children was so I thought that my child was never going to have a friend again. She was never going to attend a school. She was, you know, this was just our new reality. Her anxiety was so bad. Well, so and they, the school had to send a homeschooling teacher for us. It was really, really hard. After 4 to 7 days on antibiotics, she turned to me and said, you know, Mom, I'm going to go to school today.
Wow. That's that's amazing. Like that, you know, that it took antibiotics to turn that around. Cause a lot of times it would just be diagnosed as anxiety. Right. And it's looking at, okay, you said she wasn't going to go to school and she had to keep up all the counseling.
Right. So it was actually Barb Weiss who came into my clinic and she was coming for a sales call.
Yes, this is another naturopath. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And she heard my story and she said, Deb, your daughter's PANDAS. Go look into this. And she told me what to do and I did it. And sure enough, and eventually we went to the hospital and even the hospital finally agreed with me and said, yeah, you're right. Your daughter probably has PANDAS. And we need to address it from many different angles. Because yes, the antibiotics helped. But so PANDAS stands for pediatric autoimmune neuropsychiatric disorder associated with streptococcal infection. And so it's an autoimmune thing. And so it means it will never 100% go away. And so we have to always know that. So if she gets sick from anything, if there's any kind of extra inflammation going on in the body, if she eats very badly, I mean, there's so many causes of brain dysfunction. So even now, COVID, now they've started to say how they're starting to see psychological issues with it. Any kind of infection can cause a psychological issue. It's been proven. I know I didn't know about it when my daughter got it. And then I started doing research and there were books and books written on it since the 40s and they've known about this. And so it's mind-boggling in many ways that we're only really getting to learn about it now in mainstream medicine, how neuroinflammation, how inflammation in the gut can affect the brain, how infection, detoxification issues, oxidative stress, hormones. I mean, think about a concussion. When somebody gets a concussion, so often they get anxiety. It's not because they're having post-traumatic stress disorder from the concussion. It's because the brain has now has an assault. It's been assaulted. And the repercussions of that is that the brain tissue is affected. The detoxification pathway of the fluid in the brain is affected. And anxiety is what shows up.
Mm-hmm,
and
right.
So anything that throws us off balance, any kind of infection, I mean, there's so much research now to show us that digestive issues can and do cause anxiety and depression. It's mind-boggling. Mm-hmm. But it's more mind-boggling that all we do is when somebody gets sick, gets depression, is we put them on an antidepressant. Here's a fun fact, Lisa.
Yeah.
The first antidepressant was found because they were looking for something to cure tuberculosis. Tuberculosis, an infectious disease. And they found that one of the side effects was that people seemed to be happier. And so that was the first monoamine oxidase inhibitor.
That's fascinating. Yeah. And just to get back to the pandas, so strep, like a strep infection. So it could start off like a sore throat if people are looking for, you know, some sort of trigger, right? That could turn the immune system awry.
Well, that's that one. But then there's PANS. One, yeah. Mm-hmm. Then there's PANS, which is just, I don't know, the pediatric autoimmune neuropsychiatric syndrome. And so it's not necessarily due to strep. So strep's a big one. So if you have a child who's constantly having strep, very likely it could be it. A good way to test it even is just notice if when they're on antibiotics, they seem to be better, because these kids with strep often are on antibiotics constantly.
Right. And then why would, and it's probably a big question and maybe it's epigenetics, but why would some kids manifest PANDAS or PANS whereas other kids wouldn't?
That's a very good question. I think, so for my daughter at least, I think we had created the perfect storm for her. So she had strep. We had gone out to the zoo the day before and we had had a lot of sugar that we don't normally have, that kind of food, but she was with her friends. I think there was two or three other things going on at the same time, which just created this extremely highly inflammatory situation. So I think that's a big piece of it. I think that if we had been having proper bowel movements and detoxification in the body, and we probably could have prevented it.
Right. Yeah. So it's working on, just doing all of those naturopathic, like baseline things, like you said, eating healthy, avoiding sugar, supporting your detox.
I think she had a sleepover before she got sick as well. So she didn't have her sleep. So...
Okay. But yeah, I guess some kids may be more susceptible as well too, based on genetics potentially.
Potentially. I don't know if there's necessarily research in that area.
Okay. So they're looking at more lifestyle and causes of inflammation. So it's almost like the straw that broke the camel's back. Their body just can't handle that last trigger, that infection, it sounds like.
Yeah. And we're seeing different cytokines that come up more. So any kind of infection can cause different cytokines to be higher. And so it could just be that for some whatever reason that is affecting those trials at a higher level.
Mm-hmm, right. And so with our kids, I think you've already mentioned some, but is there anything else we can be doing just preventatively to keep that inflammation down to, you know, help prevent those outcomes where possible of them getting PANDAS or PANS? I guess it's not too like prevalent, but it's happening to kids, right?
Different statistics will say different things, but I don't know the exact numbers right now. I could grab them. But probably one in every kindergarten class. So not the maybe one in 100 for sure. Mm-hmm. So like most schools will have 3 kindergarten classes. So that means that in every year, there's probably one child with it, but it's not diagnosed. It's just diagnosed with severe anxiety or OCD or attention deficit or any of these other mental health issues.
Okay. And if they weren't treated for PANDAS or PANS, so it sounds like their anxiety would most likely be lifelong and it wouldn't be they wouldn't be addressing the root cause. So that could be.
You also become your disease. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I say to the kids that I treat right from the beginning is from this day. So I say, let's take your anxiety and let's put it on the chair beside you. And now we name it. So we give it a name and from now on, I want you to know. Oh, so we're going to call it the green dragon or whatever the child chooses. And so I never want you to say that you have anxiety again. You don't have anxiety. You have a green dragon that comes to visit sometimes. And what we're going to do together is work on it so that the green dragon comes less and less and it doesn't bother you. But this idea that we become our disease. So the more often you're told you have anxiety, then it just becomes, oh, I have anxiety. It's an excuse almost. As a matter of fact, I'm seeing with the teenagers I treat that to not have a mental health issue it's almost a pride thing to have a mental health problem, to be able to be like, oh, I've got anxiety, I've got depression, woe is me. I'm seeing that with my daughter's friends. I'm seeing that with some patients, that it's almost cool.
Right. Yeah. So it's, yeah, totally, totally.
But I
different.
Went on a tangent there. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I think that's really, really valuable to hear. Right. And I like that. Yeah. We name our emotions. We don't identify with them. It's something that comes and goes. I think that's really valuable as us as parents, right? I try to always say, like, you are feeling this way, not you are sad, you are angry, trying to distance
that's
it a bit.
It also allows dialogue a lot better with the child and the mom and the dad or whoever they're going to talk to, because you know, they can go say to their mom, hey, mom, I think the green dragon's coming back. Let's work to get rid of it. And it's no longer this terrible thing that they have that they might want to keep a secret of.
Right.
They
yeah.
don't want to face. So I find that really helps, because then we can also talk to it. We can yell at it. We can talk to it. We can do whatever we like, because it's not ourselves. We're not yelling at ourselves. We're not mad at ourselves. It's this other entity that's come to visit.
I think that's really, yeah, really powerful and really therapeutic. So it sounds like that's a great tool, is, you know, releasing emotion on it at a distance. And then it sounds like for dealing with anxiety in kids, like using the heart rate variability and those apps with the games and the breathing is really key. Do you have any other tools that you find to be really useful for kids who feel anxious, who feel depressed?
So I find one of the great things about being a naturopath is you have to really be able to read your client, like, you know. So for every person, it's different. So for some kids, even just breathing can be great. But for others, it's a terrible thing to try and do. Mindfulness can be helpful. For others, it's not. I find that envisioning, I have a little girl right now, and she was getting bullied, and she didn't know what to do or what to say. So sometimes just having a plan of going through, all right, in this situation, let's figure out exactly what you're going to do. So that then when you're in the situation, you don't ever have to think, what should I do? Because you already know, you've already practiced it. So, you know, we'll even role play sometimes, like, you know, I'll be that little girl, and then we'll have her maybe. So right now, what she's really finding is helpful is she's envisioning herself in a bubble. That's a completely safe bubble where nobody can bother her, and she can think whatever thought she likes because they can't penetrate it and they can't actually hurt her. And she's finding that one very, very beneficial right now.
Amazing. Yes. And using the ability to like play and being creative to their advantage to prep them or work through those situations before they present themselves. That sounds very useful.
So what I like to do is I like to give 3 or 4 different tools and then have them come back. So I have a couple of books in my clinic, and, you know, big books. And I'll say, you know what? The good thing about what we have to deal with you, whether it's anxiety or depression or OCD, especially if we're doing counseling, is that you see this book, and I'll pull out like a big, thick book. And I'll be like, there's this many different things we can do to help you. The bad thing is there's this many things that we can do to help you because we need to figure out which one's going to work for you. But the good thing is that one of them will.
Great.
And so it gives them that hope, like, okay, I've got this, but also letting them know that, yeah, I might tell you to do something and you hate it. And that's okay, because we have lots of options.
I think that's the power of our medicine, right, is having a lot of different tools, and it's picking and choosing what's right for each person. It's not, you know, cookbook medicine where it's like you feel anxious, this is what you do, this is what everybody does.
Another thing, if you go back to what you asked about the pandas in a young age and how you do become your disease or your illness, but it's even bigger than that when it comes to anxiety, because we've now learned that the brain, there's neuroplasticity in the brain. So I know when you and I went to school, we were pretty much taught that the brain was predetermined. By the time you hit a certain age, you're not making new neurons. This is kind of how you are. But they've now done research to find that there's a lot of neuroplasticity in the brain. So this is good and bad. It's good because we can have healing happen. It's bad because what it means is the brain actually changes for its surroundings. So if you are constantly in an anxious state, the part of your brain that sees anxiety gets bigger. It actually grows. So now the things that you didn't used to be anxious about, you suddenly are. And the reason this happens is because it's an adaptive response for survival. As far as the brain knows, is you now live in a war zone. And so it needs you to be on all the time. It needs you to be aware. It needs you to be ready to respond. And so it doesn't know that it's just that you're being bullied in school. Not just, I should not have said that. It doesn't know that the issue is that you're being bullied in school. So every time the phone rings, it goes into that attack mode. It goes, so all of the different triggers that could be there. And so now that part of the brain gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and you're more susceptible to anxiety as well. So if you don't get treated when you're young, especially for the underlying cause, your brain does go into an anxious place and you will also develop anxiety.
Mm-hmm. So the brain, yeah, the brain changes with brain what changes. We focus on, what we worry about. And then it sounds like, you know, there's ways to change it back or move out of that state, but it's easier to do when we're younger as the brain is developing at its most rapid rate.
And this is an important point because a lot of the time when you treat somebody with anxiety, they are anxious to take something. It concerns them, right? So, you know, a lot of the times your patients with anxiety, especially the adults, but even kids, are afraid to take something because they're afraid it's going to change their brain. And so the thing is taking some gentle herbs or some supplements can really help with that neuroplasticity and help it go back. So it's important for them to realize that because they're in this worrying phase, they're negatively affecting the brain. And so by taking something, it's not going to do any damage. It's going to actually take away some of the damage that's already been done. Right. And I find that when I can explain that to the patients, it really helps them be willing to take something that can give them tremendous, tremendous relief. I mean, you know that some of our herbs for anxiety have been shown to be just as good as some of the pharmaceutical products out there.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. Without the side effects. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of, so if you had to, are there like certain foods that you would recommend to help with brain? Like, I know we always think like fish oil and greens and, you know, what would be your top 3 to 5 foods for brain health if you had to pick?
So fats is huge. When we think that 70% of the dry weight of the brain is fat. So it shows how important it is to get those fats in. So nuts and seeds and avocados and the oils, like you said, if that gets to be included as food, that's great. I don't have to go onto the supplement list. But olive oil, so looking at that Mediterranean diet, exercise is huge when it comes to the brain. So especially if you're dealing with kids with ADHD, you have to get them out. You have to get them exercising. And so I have a lot of my kids having to run around the house in the morning so there's no TV in the morning, and the kids are out there getting some exercise, burning off some of the energy right from the beginning of the day. Perfect. Other foods. So anti-inflammatory foods. So lots of fruits, lots of vegetables.
Yeah. Avoiding the processed foods, the sugars, obviously the artificial colors and flavors. So those are, yeah, some really good tips to focus on the health.
Isn't that so hard as a parent? Food. Like, let's think about that. Avoiding sugar, right? Because they really made a mistake when they made the war on drugs, because it should have been the war on sugar. Because sugar is now such a reward, yet we know that some of its harm is similar to cocaine. You can see some research out there. Yet this is what society has told us that we should give our children on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. As a reward, as a celebration, when you're feeling down, you know, we use the term treats. So it's so, you know, you have to be really conscious and really aware of not using it as a tool to get a desired outcome, which is challenging. And then throw in birthday parties and, you know, going to friends' houses. So we're doing our best. Like, we didn't introduce sugar early to Stuart. Like, he didn't know what it was. So he wasn't missing out. Now he's becoming a little bit more aware, but we try to do more healthier options. vitamins, you know, make our own ice cream because we have an ice cream maker, for example. We can control the types of sugars in there. So that can help too. But unfortunately, all those products that are marketed to kids, that's what they're going to want as they get older. So
absolutely. And then you go to birthday parties, and you're not going to be that parent who doesn't let them have it. So then you do. And I mean, I was the same when I had my daughter. I was so good. I was in naturopathic medical school, so I was even better because, you know, the newly converted is the most righteous. And you look at how we were doing the birthday cakes, the no sugar, no dairy, no egg. And then I look at my son, and it certainly wasn't quite as good as she was.
Right.
Because you just go down that slippery slope because society takes you there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it sounds like
the younger the child I treat, the easier it is because I can say to the parent, you're controlling the food. Mm-hmm. I mean, many children have dairy issues, yet dairy and sugar issues. But one of the foods that we introduce them to at the youngest age is yogurt with sugar.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's pretty shocking.
It's pretty shocking. So taking away, I actually, in one of the slides, I have an upcoming presentation for the BRB conference. And I have a slide, the naturopathic one, maybe I'm saying it wrong. I have a slide where I have the ingredients to yogurt, one of the leading brands, and a Kit Kat bar. And I hide the title and I say, try to guess which one's which.
Oh my gosh. So they're both pretty disturbing with the ingredients in there. People would think the yogurt's healthy. Yeah.
You'd think the yogurt's healthier, but it has the same amount of sugar. And so it's one of those things. It's the education to say, if you want to give your child a yogurt, you can, but realize that it's in the same category as a Kit Kat bar. And mm-hmm. So do it with your eyes wide open, not thinking that you're giving them a healthy substitute.
Yeah, it could be a once in a while for something sweet, but not a daily thing as their breakfast.
Absolutely. I mean, everything should be the 80-20 rule, because if you deny people, then they're just going to force themselves to have it unless they're in a flare up. Right. So if you're treating somebody for a specific thing, then you can explain it. For the next 3 weeks, we're going to take this out of your diet. We need to decrease inflammation. Once it's decreased, then having a little bit every now and then is not going to be a problem whatsoever. But we have to get to that point.
That's right. So using, our nutrition therapeutically, you know, following the 80-20, so eating well 80% of the time, you know, having those occasional sugary treats, if we want to call them those, 20% of the time. But then if you're in a flare-up with a certain condition, you may need to do a therapeutic diet, abstaining from those foods that you typically limit.
And balancing the sugar with exercise. Because of course, if you exercise, then you're going to use up those sugar not stores, because they're not stored yet. You're going to use up that sugar that you just put in the body, and it's not going to really affect you in that same way. So we can balance. It's easy to balance if we just spend some time and think about it and make a plan.
Mm-hmm, definitely. No, yeah, I think these are some really great take-home tips for parents to incorporate and to just be aware of. I think we have a lot of great information on the HRV, supporting anxiety in our kids. Is there anything you want to leave us with before we shift to the next part of the podcast? Is there anything we missed that you wanted to cover?
I think just remembering. So like my little saying is that, you know, so mental health is not really a psychological issue, not just a psychological issue, but a brain health issue that steals your mind. And I think it's so important that we look at the root cause of all of the issues and treat each person as an individual.
Mm-hmm. I think that's so important, right? Most conditions are multifactorial. So it's looking mm-hmm. at all of these causes adding up. That's what makes our jobs complicated, but so interesting. Well, thanks, Dr. Debbie, for sharing all of that information. Are you okay to switch gears now and we'll go to the second part of the podcast?
Sure.
So I know you're doing a great job as a mom. You figured out that your daughter had pandas. That's a huge win. So maybe that should be your super mom moment. But if you could think of another one, if not, we could leave it at that.
Well, my super mom moment of the day would be that my daughter got a phone for the first time. She's going into grade 9. So we just got her a phone number today. And she texted me with a group text with two of her friends. And she said, "Mom, my friends asked if we could start this group with you in it. Is that okay?" And so to me, that's a huge win, because her friends feel comfortable enough to talk to me when things are going on, and that we have a really great relationship.
That is amazing, Deb. Wow. So first of all, Samantha didn't get her phone until now, so you held out, and then your friends are comfortable talking with you, and so is she. So very big supermom moment.
And let me tell you, that was a hard thing to hold out for, because most kids have a phone by grade 5. Right. So to wait until grade 9...
Wow. We'll try. That's a good model for us to follow. Stuart's only 3, but you know, we'll try to hold out until then. Great job. Well, mine's going to seem, you know, it's still a super mom moment, but it was, I scheduled a dentist appointment for Stuart before he went back to preschool because he was off during most of the pandemic. And I scheduled it for a time that Pete could take him, because normally I'm the one that takes Stuart to his appointments, because I try to do it, you know, like not too late in the evening so I could take him at a preschool a bit earlier. But since Pete's been working from home, I scheduled it so that he could take him to the dentist, and they both had a blast. So I just was delegating some of the appointments. So that's my super mom moment.
No, that is. It is true to give up that release, that control.
Totally. Yeah, I kind of was a little bit sad I wanted to go with him, but I'm like, no, I don't have to go to every appointment. So I could just get the report back from Pete. And I know you're doing a great job, but can you think of a mom mess up that's happened recently?
Yeah. So yesterday, my mom mess up was I worked late on Tuesday nights, and I had told everybody that I would be home at around 7:30. And then I ended up not going home. I ended up going to my parents' house and helping them with something, and just a few other things came up. And then after 10 o'clock, I still hadn't gone home, but my phone goes to don't receive notifications, do not disturb. That's it after 10. So, and I didn't bother to look at it. And then I see that my daughter had called me from the home phone, because she didn't have a phone yet, just to say, "Mom, where are you? We're so scared. Zach and I are so scared. Where are you?" And so, oops. I told my husband, so I didn't even think that he would tell the kids. So they were all stressing out about me.
Oh, they were all concerned. Well, you weren't out partying. You were out helping your parents. But yeah, it sounds like their kids were worried. So, oh, you're still doing a great job, though.
Oh, thanks, Lisa. So are you.
Thanks. And yeah, talking about TV, my mom mess up is Stuart's been watching a little bit more TV. It's not ridiculous amounts. And we've been giving him a little bit of control, picking what he wants from YouTube Kids. We have the app, so he doesn't have his own phone, but we'll let him pick after a few minutes. Like, he can scan through it for a few minutes and pick something. And we haven't been totally paying attention to what he's watching. So I, you know, looked up the other day, and he was watching a show about dinosaurs, and it was pretty like scary, in my opinion. It was a cartoon and it was aimed for kids, but they were attacking each other and there was images of blood and things. So I was like, oh no, what have we done? And he, you know, the few nights before, he was waking up around 2:30 or 3 crying a bit, saying, I'm scared of something. So aww. We'd ask him when he was watching it, like, we said, "Is this scary? I don't like it. It's scary." And he said, "No, I like it." But then I think it was affecting his sleep. So we had to stop him watching those shows. So yeah, you know, if it's a kid show, it's still not great. I'm sure people know that.
Oh,
I've got to pay for attention.
When it comes to mom failures and TV, like COVID, my son doesn't enjoy TV, but he loves watching YouTubers, especially streamers. I don't even know what that was. When he was in grade 3, he told me he wanted to be a streamer. I'm like
that's a job now.
Like, floats in the wind? What?
That's awesome.
But I feel like these streamers are like growing, educating our kids here. Right. They like to watch the kids. I don't know if you even know what it is. Maybe your kids are too young, your son's too young, but they watch other kids play video games.
Oh, I've heard of it. Yes, I've heard of it.
Yeah, so those are called streamers. And so, yeah, so this is what most of these kids are doing for fun, is watching somebody else, these older kids than them, like teenagers or 20-year-olds, play video games. And so now I'm like, just play your own video game. Come on, stop watching. At least you'd be doing something.
Wow. Yeah. That's, you know, I've heard it's becoming really popular. There's even like leagues and things where people are watching gamers compete. But yeah, you're like, might as well play the game. At least you'll be getting some stimulation and learning.
Play your own game. Forget about get outside and exercise. Now you're just excited if they play the game themselves.
Fascinating. Well, we all got to do what we got to do to get by during this time. So no judgment. And then Deb, what's your mama must have? What's something that's really been helping you out or you can't live without lately?
So my mama must have would definitely be exercise. Mm-hmm. And it always has been. So even when the kids were really young and they were in their stroller, I would put them in the stroller and be like, you're just doing this. I'm going for a jog. You're going to sit there for 30 minutes because this is mommy's time. And I've always made sure that I continue to do that. And so that there's the respect around the exercise all around.
I love that. Yeah, you're a very active person. You're a fitness instructor. I see you out at the cottage doing a workout on your back deck. I see you running all the time.
That's embarrassing.
No, I think it's great.
So I do kickboxing classes.
Totally. Yeah. You're doing like step up on the stairs and all of that. So no, it's great. You're a great motivator for staying healthy. And then my mama must have right now, I got a weighted blanket. So I was a little bit late to the game. It's a Zonli weighted blanket. So there's like small glass beads, apparently lead free, that are cooling too. So it weighs 15 pounds and it's really been helping with sleep. I don't get as hot at night being a perimenopausal mama. And it does provide that extra comfort, that weight to get you into a more deep sleep. So I'm really enjoying that. Have you tried a weighted blanket, Deb? Or what are your thoughts on those?
What? Somebody just gave me one that they want. And I thought I would try it out at the clinic, but I didn't try it. I should take it home and try it.
Yeah. And some people say they even just wrap it around themselves when they're, you know, feeling a bit anxious or stressed. Mm-hmm. And that.
Yeah. That's what I thought I'd use it for, like during a IV or something.
Definitely. So yeah, let me know what you think.
I will. Thank you for that piece of advice.
No problem.
I'll try it out.
Well, thanks so much, Dr. Deb Smers, for joining us today. We're going to link everything you mentioned into the show notes. And then how can people reach you? We'll share that as well. But what sort of social media channels are you using right now?
So the best way would even just be on my website, which is just natliving.ca. Or I just started a Brain Matters Facebook group. And that would be a great way too.
Okay. So if you could just repeat the last part about the Brain Math Facebook group.
Sure. So Brain Matters. So discussing all things brain Facebook group.
Perfect. So they can check you out there.
For sure.
Okay, great. Well, thanks so much, Deb. Everybody have a healthy week.
So great to talk to you, Lisa.
Oh, I love chatting with you. I love your energy and your passion.